When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Snapple. Want to know another Snapple fact? The first hot air balloon passengers were a sheep, a duck, and a rooster. Ridiculous. Check out Snapple.com to find ridiculously flavored Snapple near you.
Let's go!
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Bingetown TV and our coverage of HBO's Succession. So we are back again. Episode 4 now of season 4. Honeymoon what?
Honeymoon States.
Hey, honeymoon what?
Honeymoon State.
Let's go. Okay. So we're 4 episodes in. We're approaching the halfway point. Obviously, last episode was the big one. We lost our, I guess you could say, main character, the center of everyone's universe. So it's nice now to see this episode of the sun is now kind of gone and where are all these orbiting little planets going and how are they handling it? So we get kind of all takes place right in one spot, which is in Logan's apartment, which is very nice. But before we get into our actually talking about the episode more and more, and Kathleen will have our executive summary, just a very quick Bingetown business thing. As always, if you have not yet subscribed, doing so on whatever you're listening to is the best way to support us at this moment. Just kind of, you're just tuned in completely. And also BingetownTV.com just got a beautiful rework by the wonderful James, aka Jimmy, aka Jimmy Pa. So definitely go there to check out all of our episodes that we have. If you've only really been listening to Succession stuff, I think you'll be pleasantly surprised about the amount of things that we've covered in the 3-ish years that we've been doing this podcast. And if you are listening on our Succession specific feed, hey, nailed it that time, then I would recommend hopping over to our main feed as well. And that's where all of our episodes are. So you can kind of fully dive into Bingetown outside of just Succession. So that out of the way, I will then pass the torch to the lovely Kathleen and her episode 4 executive summary.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, everybody, for coming on the, I'm just faking it. Okay, so, all right. The morning after Logan's death, the gang gathers for a coronation demolition derby. The kids barely have time to grieve before having to choose who will be the new interim CEO of Waystar Royco and hopefully bring home the deal with Mattson. In terms of headspaces of the crew, Roman has pre-grieved, Kendall has had a therapy session in the middle of the night, and Shiv kicks off the episode dropping a bombshell of her own. She has a tiny Wom's Gams in the oven. As expected, Queen Marcia smelled blood in the water and quickly hurried back to town. With her limited screen time, she had made sure to lock in her inheritance by claiming that her and Logan were having phone sex on the daily and promptly kicks a more appropriately emotional Carrie off the premises. Connor and Willa have big plans brewing, one being a purchase of Logan's apartment and the second being their glamorous honeymoon to Wisconsin, Minnesota, Michigan, and Pennsylvania, which will surely secure his 1%. Tom, lost without Daddy Logan, throws his hat in the ring and gets absolutely dunked on by Carl, so he pivots and seemingly hitches on to Roman. The episode takes a turn when the big three, Jerry, Frank, and Carl, find a piece of paper from Logan's safe with some pencil scribbles and drawings that happen to say Kendall's name on it. They think about making it disappear, but ultimately decide to tell the kids. Whether the name was underlined or crossed off, we'll never know. After Papergate, we immediately see the old Kendall reappearing, for better or for worse, probably, and with some zhuzhing from Kendall and a promise to keep Shiv in the loop, the siblings ultimately decide that Roman and Kendall will step up and take on the job, and the board agrees. The new Gen Roys seem to be bonding extra hard the last few episodes, but not for long, as Kendall goes behind their backs to kick off a smear campaign against L to the OG in an attempt to secure the bag. We are left with a lot of questions as per usual, a few being, when will Shiv tell Tiptoe Tommy about the pregnancy? Why are the writers doing her so dirty with that fall down the steps? How will Roman handle Kendall betraying him right off the bat? Will the Gojo deal go through? And most importantly, what in the world does Greg ? Mean? And that's a summary. Stuttered through, but that's okay. Fantastic. I was doing it up until the last second.
No, that was good. You it was a good usage of the in-universe terms.
Yes,
and jokes.
Thank you.
That was
thank
good. You. With a little sprinkle of yourself in there. That's what it's all about, yeah, right there.
It was a bit of a bottle episode. Just because it was in the same house, same people, no one extra. But I mean, people kept coming in and out, of course. But it was great. I loved it. We were so tired watching it last night, but on the rewatch, it's very good. And this is the episode where things are switching. Like, you thought the siblings were all moving in the same motion, but now I feel like with this one piece of paper, it's like, oh shit. And not to mention that Shiv news was fucking awesome. You thought maybe Carrie was going to be pregnant, but and she still could be, but Shiv, yeah.
The first time I watched it, I remember thinking, again, it was late. I was beat as well, and thinking like, oh, okay, not a ton happened, but it is what it is. And then I rewatched it, and I was like, well, A, I was laughing at a lot of things, a lot of good quotes, and then B, realizing like, okay, this was a really good like chess piece moving episode for us. And I feel like Succession excelled because a lot of times it's not really like it's a show about things, but not all, maybe not all the time, but it still can like be a great show even when we're all in the same apartment and we're having conversations with kind of the same groups of people, and they can still shine like that. And that's really what came out for me in my second watch.
Yeah, Kathleen's like, there's so much to cover, but also like what happened, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, it's a lot of talking of things. It's a lot of minor things happening, and it's always at a very fast pace. Like, I felt even in Connor's wedding in the beginning, we were like, oh my god, this is just everyone's jabbering and there's so much happening, and it's all discussion based, so versus like action oriented of other HBO shows. So that's always interesting. And I've heard a lot of people be like, it's so dialogue heavy, but that's where the magic is in this show. All the lines, all the little character mannerisms and quirks.
All right, let's hop into, we do what I'm terrible at remembering, but we're moments, right, first?
Yes.
Yep, favorite moments.
All right, I could go first, because Kathleen obviously just spoke. So I was shifting, I guess I currently am shifting, we'll see where I end up at the end of the sentence, of two Kendall scenes, because as we covered in our season 4 hype episode, Kendall is my favorite character, that's my boy, I'm slightly cosplaying in him in every one of these episodes. And for better or for worse, I guess, like Kathleen mentioned in the executive summary, I am going to pick the therapy recommendation scene. Again, we always talk about it as well, we love the sibling stuff. That just really stuck out to me. I feel like Kendall, like, it was very sincere of him to do that. He actually meant, like, he meant well in offering that recommendation of saying, like, you know, I got a great guy, like, whatever. And then Shiv was like, oh, you got a great fucking grief guy, don't you? And he was like, yeah, I do. And then Roman chimes in like, oh, yeah, you're going to fucking handle this or whatever. I just kind of liked both the serious knit level, like the actual meaning behind what was happening, and also the way it was just like a nice sibling interaction. The backup was going to be Kendall and Frank, but...
Oh, that's good. He even knows that, like, he's setting himself up for failure even by saying it, because he's like, you guys are going to make fun of me, but... I got a guy.
He always has a guy. I'm sure Jess found him the best grief guy.
Hey, listen, if he wants to get right on his mental health, I would love that for Kendall. That is good. That is growth. Although this episode, he is turning back to his old self. So,
yeah.
I also had a kids moment when they were reading the reviews, as they called it, which was the obituaries, and they were just reading things and saying what it actually meant. Like, oh, he's racist. Yeah, he's a man of his times. Yeah, he's racist. Like, that was incredible to me, just every single one of them. You're like, oh, that is what they mean by that. And if not, it felt like cathartic for them. Like, they could have sort of a jest, but not be hating him in that moment, right? It was like in a loving way versus how it ends with Kendall and Hugo.
Yeah, geez.
I also like that those are things like the racism, never playing, like they understand that those things are wrong, which I like. I'm glad that like our guys and girl aren't racist. I mean, Roman, maybe he says some bad things sometimes, but like Kendall and Shiv are decent people in the way of like they grew up in a generation where it's like, okay, that's not cool, don't fucking do that, which I like, because a lot of times they're on the wrong side. But and at least in that sense, they are decent people. I liked that too. I am.
Sorry, I mean, they're just, it's funny, like the level of a curve you have to grade them on.
The bar is
their dad owns Fox News, but they're good.
Yeah, I know. You know what I mean, though.
Oh no, of course I know. It's just funny what the show does to you almost. Yeah. Like being a fan of the show, it's like you have to almost accept this base level of scumbaggery from everyone involved. And then once you get past that, it's like, okay, I like this character.
All right. I was in between two. I'm going to give it to the henchman talking about what was on the paper without telling us what or who it mentions, because that was perfection TV suspense. It kept going like back and forth. It's just Carl and Frank, and then Jerry comes in and they mention like a princess and this, and you're like, what does it say? What's going on? Because that felt even more of a bomb drop than Shiv getting the call, which was my other one, because I really just wasn't expecting it. I feel like we should have, because she's just been in a state she's pretty far along. I mean, she's somewhere in between, I don't know, she's probably in her second trimester somewhere. So that's like, she's pregnant, you know? And it was good stuff, but I mean, we'll get to it once we get to Shiv's talk. But yeah, I'm going to give it to the henchmen only because they had a great episode, all three of them. They were in it a lot, and I really enjoyed their stuff. And the writers did a really good job with that.
When you started that sentence, and sorry to speak over you, Alex, I thought you were going to say in the China cabin in the cupboard.
Me too.
Yeah, because that would have tied in that, because I was going to actually bring that scene up when Alex had said, talking about the quotes and like what they actually meant. And it was almost the reverse in that scene where like the three of them could actually say what they wanted. They kind of dropped some of the corporate speak while they were there. And I love Carl just blurting out like, he was souring on you, Jerry. And like what he says to Tom, like that was kind of fun to see them actually speak out loud. But then they go right back to the coded corporate speak when they're alone and then trying to figure everything out for sure.
Yeah, that was my other favorite moment. They were just being absolutely barbaric. And it wasn't even just to each other about Logan. They're like, well, he's not fucking here anymore. So who gives a shit? Like how quickly the respect and the getting in line and towing the line is gone, obviously. And Carl is just more barbaric than ever. Yes. And then I just felt like, I was saying this to you, Frank, that's the most I've ever heard him speak, I think. Yeah. I was like, I don't even know that I would know what this actor sounds like or what his personality is. And now he's kind of asserting himself more.
He was running the show.
He's not trying to get ahead. He's seemingly, I'm sure he has an angle, but I think he's kind of trying to just do his job as executor of all the Logan stuff.
Logan Roy, I mean, he's one tough cookie. is that good. What he says?
It's something like he's a tough old nut.
Not to crack or
he's a tough old nut, yeah.
He says goofy stuff.
Yeah.
I love when Jerry walks in. She's like, hey boys, or whatever. Like, and then they start. But a question I want to ask is, so the subtitle said princess.
Yeah.
But I felt like I heard prince, like princes, plural princes.
See, I'm a sucker for the subtitles. Like I if I read it, I believe that. So I think it said princess, and I think they did that to throw you off thinking it means Jerry, but it meant Kendall. But then Carl's saying something like, Jerry's about to screw me. I'm like a quarter of a million in on a Greek island or something.
He always has some mess that has to get cleaned up too. Like we were confused about that. And I don't know if it was like him talking about two things at once, like calling Kendall a princess, also saying Jerry, or was it like if he wrote Kendall and it's crossed off, then clearly like maybe they had decided Jerry, fuck it. And he just wasn't happy about that still. I don't know. It was a bit of a confusing moment. And I don't think their subtitles are off very often. Some shows I'm like, who wrote this? Are you even reading this?
Yeah, script? I was just kind of curious. I mean, I could see them like referring to Kendall as a princess.
Yeah, agreed.
Like that feels very, you know, well within Carl's wheelhouse of things that he would say. So, all right, we can jump into quotes. Do we want to go backwards or do you want me to start?
Yes, I'll hop in. So mine is a Shiv quote. This one was tough because I actually went through both watches without writing anything down. I was busy with the executive summary. And then we talked through some quotes and I picked one, but it was honestly, Dad sounds amazing. I'd like to have met Dad, because and that's the kickoff to the conversation that you said was one of your favorite moments. It's great. And, you know, when like they talk about in the post, like when a public figure dies, they write all these things, it becomes something bigger than, you know, and the family's just left sitting there like, OK, like you didn't even know this old fucker. Like he was a piece of shit. But I would like to have met Dad is like both hilarious and sad as hell, because like they had a dad that sucked. So that's mine.
Mine was, again, back to the China cabinet, having a look at the China. Jerry's delivery of just absolutely flaming Carl as a dinosaur. Just what you did in the 90s with cable. Huge. And it's like, fuck you. Just the delivery. And Jerry's a queen for that. And it just really paints the picture for you.
You love Jerry.
Do.
We all you're very close to taking mine, because mine is right after that when Jerry says to Tom, oh, you're sick with grief, you might want to put that fish taco down, you're getting your melancholy everywhere.
She that was on fire.
They yeah. all were, especially Carl and Jerry with the zingers, and Frank with the sincerity in this episode. Yeah. Really came in with the screen time they gave him this episode. He executed. He really did. He was good.
Frank was definitely fantastic. Maybe they just feel like kids that the dad's not home and they're just letting loose, right? I think they always did corporate like double speak, and now they're just saying whatever the fuck comes to mind to each other. It feels almost like a shift. I wouldn't say they're having fun, but I think they're speaking a little more loosely than we've ever seen, which is enjoyable.
Yeah, I think, I mean, we can transition right into what is our final and always longest segment of just, you know, our character analysis, market watch. I mean, if we want to just take the henchman, I feel like Frank is, like Alex said, he's somewhat of a neutral party. I don't think he really feels one way or another. I think he legitimately cares about Kendall. He obviously doesn't like Roman, and he feels slightly ambivalent, I guess, towards Shiv. So, I mean, I guess the comings and goings of the episode, it's good for Frank, just because if Kendall's in a room, it's good for Frank. But I don't know. It seems very bad for Carl, obviously, because of some level of debt that he has. And Jerry, I'm not really sure about either.
Jerry's in a way better position now. I think it's Carl, when they said, you know, CFO is an easy transition, I don't think Carl's ever getting it over Jerry. Yeah. Jerry's done it successfully. She has the receipts. I know she said, like, Logan was souring on you. And she's like, go fuck yourself. That was not in writing anywhere. I think Jerry is truly the safer bet over Carl. And I don't think Frank wants it. I think he's just there for, like, the betterment of the company. He's, like, there for the kids. Carl's hilarious, but there's just no way. No. For television sakes, it's never going to be Carl. Jerry is like, she's a woman. She's a loyal woman. She was just about to be fired. Like, that's good TV. If it's going to be Jerry versus Kendall or something like that, that's how they were kind of, you know, feeding it to us.
I would hate that.
Yeah.
Kendall versus Jerry plot would make my heart sad.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to be having it, not out for her, but he's asked Roman, are you still pulling for Jer Bear? You know, so he's got his eye on her, and he's also got his other eye on the prize, I think. But with Roman and her on the outs, she's kind of on the outs with the kids, and I don't know how good that actually leaves her in position. If Roman was like, I don't want to deal with this anymore, or maybe he wants to smooth it over at some point. But this episode gave me the impression that he's kind of over it, too. He's like, if you're not going to forgive me, then fine, we will play this game, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Roman was incredibly kind this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the Carrie scenes, the genuine concern and empathy he was giving her when on the floor, being like, do I have your number? He asked her twice. Make sure I have your number so we can figure this out. And a Carrie who is just losing it. And we can talk about whether or not they were actually, I believe her when she's like, he was, at least she thought he was working on something to get them married, you know?
I don't know. I think he cared and was being empathetic, and it's the Roman growth trajectory, but I also think they want to find out what's the real deal with Marcia, right? And she's a key to that. Do they actually speak every night? Like, can you get in his phone? And so I think he wants to help piece together, and not help her, but I think there's more.
Yeah. And Roman, he's so great, because I almost feel like, speaking of grading on a curve, like almost everything he said this episode that was like comedic could have been a favorite quote. Like, he was killing it. When he talks to Greg, when Greg comes in, and like his high, his like very deadpan high, was just like maybe burst out laughing for the first time in the episode. And yeah, he does come across, it's so funny. I was talking to Alki and Luke, and they were talking about how like Roman has no character growth. And I feel like it's just like this season, especially for me, has been like, maybe there was just some veil that got lifted for me, or it's a combination of the two, but he feels so different.
They're not here, right? They're not in season four.
No, they're not caught up yet.
Her friend Kevin just got to season four, but pre-season four, we were with him and he's like, I just fucking hate Roman, you know? Yeah. And I was like, my friend Kyle did as well, kind of, until season four when we are all pulling for him and he has had so much growth this specific season. I don't know why they waited to just like dump it all now. But it's been a joy to watch, and he's becoming one of my, I mean, he was already in my top five, but he is like crawling up. He's so funny, but he's also someone you could root for now. I think his fatal flaw is that he's a Menken boy, you know, that's his fatal flaw. But other than that, if you take that out, I'm like fully rooting for Roman.
I feel like he too has a way almost to get in to like every kind of scenario almost. I feel like because he has, I mean, which is crazy to say, but some level of like, you know, that business experience. He is really central to the Gojo deal. I mean, Madsen literally calls him to talk about it. So, I mean, depending on, obviously, Kendall is known for a little bit of fits of wild cardiness, if you want to make up a turn on the spot. But it's just, I feel like Roman has at this point, maybe besides Jerry, but there's still like history there. I feel like he has a level of goodwill almost with a lot of different parties.
It's interesting because Tom knows that Roman was in good graces with Logan. Logan actually wanted Roman, right? I guess maybe Carl and Frank knew that. Jerry was getting fired by him, so I guess that implies that. But Roman's going to have to tell Shiv and Kendall that at some point because Kendall betrays Roman. I don't know how big of a betrayal this is going to be, but I know Roman's going to be really fucking hurt by it.
Yeah.
Roman's going to have to be like, I met with Dad the night before he died. Like, I was in with Dad. So fuck off. Like, I'm the one he wanted here, and it's going to have to come out.
He sort of alluded to it. He did. He's like, let's not get into it right now, but things were happening. There are conversations I had that you didn't exactly know about. So, yeah, I think it's going to really hurt him because I think he's almost the most emotionally invested in this little sibling reunion and path forward. I think Kendall obviously can take it or leave it, and Shiv is always irons in every other fire. So I think he will be displeased and also feel disrespected, right? They're supposed to be partners and he always is protecting Dad. Like, that's his number one thing. So
I think the biggest thing, which we haven't really talked about, and now that Kendall's going a little rogue, we can talk Kendall. Now multiple people know about Kendall killing that guy, right? There's a level of blackmail that we haven't really talked about because it's like, no one's going to say that.
Yeah.
But now if Kendall starts going rogue, like he always fucking does, there is this huge, huge, huge piece of blackmail. Like, Kendall's already blackmailing Hugo, which we haven't talked about. I tried to fit it in the summary.
Yeah.
But
couldn't fit the strap on in the summary.
I didn't realize until my second watch that Hugo uses that first in the beginning of the episode. Because I remember
his daughter.
Yeah. which is crazy. I think he says they haven't spoken in months. So that's like the first thing that he says to her in months. But because I thought Kendall just whipped that out and I was like, all right, killer, settle down there. But then I rewatched and I was like, okay, well, at the very least, Hugo planted the phrase in his head. So that's not as bad.
I don't get why Hugo went to him in the first place, to be honest. Like, why would he tell Kendall? I was confused by that behavior. Second time around,
I thought, I'm just making the assumption that like he realizes that Kendall overheard some of the conversation.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And Kendall has the money and the influence to try and make it go away if possible. And it seems like by Hugo's like, thanks, Ken. He thought Kendall was like, cause he said, all right, buddy. And it's like, okay, I guess he's handling it. How do you handle insider trading? I have no idea, but cause
Kendall was making deals all over the place in this episode.
He really was.
He just got handed information about insider trading and was like, this is nothing, basically. Oh, my God. Yeah, I wrote Hugo's Clown of the Week. I'm starting that for myself.
Yeah, he is the Clown of the Week.
For sure.
Besides Greg, who I hate now, I've like been really... It's hard. Greg is not fun to watch, especially in this episode. Like, I would say the funniest part he was involved in is Tom saying like those things while the guy from Barry, I forget his name in the show, is talking, and Tom's saying funny stuff, and then Greg says the dick line and Tom's like, no. Which is really good delivery from Tom, but Greg is a flop
those were disgusting brothers trading disgusting remarks about Logan.
Yeah. And of course, Tom carrying the interaction because Tom's actually like the main character in all of their things. I feel good about the fact that I held off on giving Greg kudos in our season 4 hype episode. Although we all did say we were investing in Tom and Greg. Looking back, it feels so obvious that something was going to happen to Logan and then the two of them would be, you know, up a creek with no paddle, essentially, and yeah, you know, rudderless, whatever you want to say. And watching it is hard. Greg just kind of sucks. Him just like slinking up to everyone. The Marcia thing was so weird too.
He's a shameless bottom feeder is what I wrote down. He's literally walking around trying to find who to latch onto next. And he thinks Marcia might be it, which is
wild.
Interesting. I mean, she needs someone on the ground, right? And I don't think Tom actually thinks Greg would betray him, which is delusional in the world they live in, especially with the logistics file on the computer. I wonder what will come of that.
Yeah, and you had mentioned that you think that maybe Greg is getting a whiff of like, oh, Tom's maybe not someone I want to hitch my wagon to nowadays.
Where's he going? Where's his trajectory at this point, you know?
I think Tom's best bet is Roman. I really do. I mean, it was a smart move to play that because Tom knew, and Roman now seems like a good bet. I mean, of course, now Roman has the sexual harassment stuff. Kendall killed a man, and Shiv's a woman, so she could never be on top. She could never be CEO because she has ovaries.
I agree.
And they're all equal. All three of those things are equal offenses.
Well, it's interesting because I read Roman's look after Tom tries to cuddle up to him as somewhat like a level of consideration, maybe like just kind of potentially maybe playing out what it would look like, because they obviously the camera lingering on Roman's face afterwards meant something. That could be the wrong interpretation of it, but I could see it. I mean, I don't know if I mean, this is obviously, we can talk about Tom and Shiv together here because I think their futures at some level are intertwined. Obviously, they're married, but Shiv is pregnant and Tom is looking for someone to latch onto. He tried obviously the hardest with Shiv because it's the easiest for him to actually say things to Shiv. But Tom just, I mean, we will fucking see what happens because no one likes him.
So Kyle, I remember in our hype up pod, we were talking about Tom and his origins and how he would be in the same place as Shiv. We don't get much, but they say in the beginning of the relationship, or at least in the beginning meets, she was in France. He flew there and he was being, I mean, it was a weird story. It's not, it wasn't that charming. It was,
everyone's talking about how this is the first time they can see the connection between this role, him in this, and then what is it, Pride and Prejudice or whatever, just the way he like talks about the fine silk shirt and stuff. I was like, this is weird dialogue to me. This was very left field for me, but we get a little background.
It makes sense that Tom was like kind of a wuss in the beginning, that Shiv had to
like
keep him at arm's length, and then finally was like, I like it all. Like, he had to be the one being like, is this okay? Is this okay? And she probably loved that.
Yeah, it was a very interesting conversation.
What do you think, like, split wise in terms of genuine versus like career move posturing
for him?
Yeah. It's hard. I'm a sucker. So I'm feeling, at first I thought it was genuine. Second watch, I was like, okay, maybe it's not so genuine. I just can't tell with him.
Yeah. Like, will he do or say anything? I mean, we were saying, how delusional is he to say, hey, my hat's in the ring to everyone. Yeah. He's the newest. Everything Carl said about him was so true. He's an interloper. He's only here because of his marriage. Let's be honest. And maybe he has some business acumen, but that's not how he got there, as all of them theoretically sort of did maybe 30 years ago. But and you think back to season 1 when he's like marrying Shiv and he thinks that she's putting his name in the ring, and whatever gave him that impression. It's just, he kind of lives on a different planet. I think
he loves Shiv. I'm a sucker. Yeah, and I think he really loves Shiv. And when he says the line read of, don't, you'll regret it, let me be kind to you, or let me pay you some kindness or something like that, and she's like, that ain't for me, son, I believed him there, and I think he's just being gentle and kind like a husband would. I think like it's more of an opportunity of him sliding in being like, I want to be the husband. Like, I don't think he wanted to break up. She's the one who was like, I think we're just done here. I think we're completely done. I don't know that he wanted to do that. So I think he's being genuine. I just, Tom, I love him. Yeah, I love him.
I'm biased. So I was the first time watching, I'm like, oh my God, look at this guy, dude, being such a nice dude. But then I agree, like looking at it somewhat objectively, I don't understand the point of the story. You might have just connected the dots for me right there, Kathleen, when you were talking of, like, she says that people being kind to her isn't her thing. And then he gives an example of how, like, the relationship potentially started by him being overly kind to her, I guess, is the connection there. But it felt very out of place. And she obviously is like, that was a long time ago, and walks away.
I also thought it was interesting that he alluded to her having been in like a bad place or something had happened when she was there, or she was over there getting over it. And I feel like we've heard that before, and I'm very curious as to what it is.
There's a lot to dive into with Shiv. First of all, just the kid wise, I'm shocked that it didn't put a little glimmer in Tom's eye when she said like he won't be able to tuck his grandkids in at night or whatever now. And I guess that could just mean like future grandkids. I feel like
when does Shiv ever say that kind of thing?
Yeah, and it's not Kendall's kids, you know, they're like grown up now. They're like fucking preteens and teenagers. Like they're not, he's not tucking them in. Or he's, and Tom very smartly says, oh, he would never do that anyway. So whatever. But I just feel for Shiv because especially this was really the best scene of the episode, I thought, is when the three kids kick Connor out in his own house now. And
mi casa es su casa.
Yeah. And they have the conversation and they make a dad promise on yesterday, because yesterday was an intense day. I think it bonded them even closer. And Shiv, when they turn to Shiv after Rome and Kendall have their moment, and Shiv goes, what about me, in this like entitled little baby brat girl way. And I'm like, Shiv, you're so much better than this. But it sucks because number one, she's many weeks pregnant and she hasn't told a soul, because one, she's already underestimated, she's already devalued just by being a woman. Now that she's going to be pregnant, they're going to literally just like toss her aside.
Yeah.
And it's brutal. I can understand why. And I was listening to a podcast this morning and with Sarah Snook, and she was basically like, I think she was hoping that the doctor said something was wrong. That would be easier to stomach than to know that the baby was okay, because, you know, it'd be easier to get rid of the baby. She's, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
for sure.
It's tough. It's a huge bombshell. And I can't believe they opened the episode with that, because we were like, I was like, damn, how did I not guess that coming? And Sarah Snook's pregnant in real life. And you don't want to be like, I wonder if we'll bake that into the show, you know, just because, you know, like they do magicians and everyone, you know, they do that sometimes. But I can't believe we didn't make that guess, because they've been talking about kids for a while, eating that maca root.
I mean, it's obviously Tom's, right? But I guess this is one thing with the show's tough of like the timelines. Is it the Caroline, their mom's wedding night? When she basically tells him that like he isn't good enough for her, like I'm just gonna assume it was that night. Not that I guess it matters so much, but it's just interesting.
I mean, it does matter, right?
Well, we are under the impression that they've been kind of estranged for a minute now, so yeah, you do wonder timeline wise. And it's not like we get Shiv and Tom's sex scenes for better or worse.
Yeah, and I don't think I can. I'm one to speculate on the pregnancy. And how it works and, and things of the sort. So
like they were together, and I don't think it's going to be like a surprise someone else's. That's just not like the vibe they've put the show in, I feel, especially when he was begging to be a dad before maybe going into jail.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Alex goes, Shiv's not going to let him have any custody. And I was like, he should have full custody. He should have every ounce of custody. Fair. I mean, Shiv's just falling into the same patterns her parents did. Like, she doesn't want this kid, and now she's gonna have a kid just like her mom and dad who didn't want her. It's like, you know, I don't know that. We don't know that to be sure with Shiv. Like, that's just the harsh what we think because of, you know, previous things that Shiv has acted and said. But, you know, it's not similar to what her parents did.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point. I feel like maybe that's something the show has been missing overall. Kendall's kids are a little older now. He clearly doesn't see them like ever. And there's somewhat of a point to that. And I feel like they explicitly tell you almost that, you know, his ex-wife it's fairly purposeful that he doesn't have a ton of interaction with them. But I feel like continuing, continuing that like cycle of trauma, I feel like is a really interesting place for the show to go. And we haven't really got it a ton with Kendall and his kids. It's more of just like an assumption due to his absence. And I think it would be interesting to see how Shiv handles that.
Yeah. I think before we move on from Shiv, what you said got me thinking, just all these aspects of being a woman are stacked against her in this like very much boys club, which a lot of things are, especially in corporate politics and at the top of it, largely in the Roy family. I'm sitting here like, she's getting the brat edit, and why is she so fucking whiny? And like, they're just really doing her dirty. But I'm wondering if there's a point to it of like, that's how people perceive any emotion from a woman anyways in these settings, you know what I mean? And maybe not, maybe I'm overthinking it, but I would normally side with the woman and be like, everyone's being, you know what I mean, like overreacting to her having emotions. But I mean, she just gets so like aggro and just so like doesn't let things go, and it makes me just cringe. But I'm wondering if it's, I don't know, to highlight that a little bit more, that disparity in that situation.
Well, when she says stop smiling after she falls, I'm like, that was the worst line of the series. That was a cringe. Somehow in a series full of cringy, awful moments, that was the cringiest one. Stop smiling like a little kid who ate shit and got up and was embarrassed.
Right. It makes her feel, they always give her just these moments of, it's like immaturity leaping out or something. And I don't know. I guess in that family, you probably don't really learn what to do with your emotions in a healthy way anyways.
Yeah, I think at some level it's instinctual, because I feel like same thing with like looking at the piece of paper, and she's the one who says, well, is it underlined or crossed out? And like, fair to look at it, fair. But that felt like almost like instinct of like right back to like we're all battling, because she didn't really need to say that. Like the siblings had all been on a good kind of
Kendall's
line.
Like
she even says, right after that, because she was like, you know, everything's felt good when she's talking to Roman, like with the three of us, but that didn't feel good in there. Presumably just saying because Kendall's name was on the piece of paper. And I just thought the underline crossed out was just like a little bit of a wild line. It almost felt like she just like blurted it out.
Yeah, it was like choosing sides, when right now it was very clear the side is, do you want the family in charge and can we hang in there as the kids, or is it the old heads? And it felt like Shiv almost blew that, and Kendall's just looking at her thinking, well,
sure as shit doesn't say fucking Shiv.
Yeah, he was barbaric with that one.
The underline and cross out thing is actually really interesting. One of the writers on the pop was talking about how it was purposeful, and they wanted to figure out how to kind of introduce that back in to be like, oh, Kendall really was maybe on top, or was he? And they thought about, oh, what if, you know, there's a name in the safe? And then it's like, okay, well, that's kind of like, all right, there's just a name in the safe. And then someone had in the writer's room had pitched like, what if there's an underline, but it kind of looks like it's crossed off. So it causes a little drama. And I'm like, that actually really is as simple as one little line. And I for sure think it's crossed out. Who the hell is underlining? So I'm like, Logan one day just like took it out and was like, yeah, I really liked my own thought. That was good stuff. Emphasis.
It just leaves so much room for gray area. We all know that that's a cross off, but Frank and everyone do they just know that nothing is what it seems, I think. And it made me laugh. Somebody posted on Twitter the blue or gold dress, you know, like one of those internet trends that divides people. And posted the picture of the piece of paper from Succession.
That's actually hilarious. I mean, that's probably a perfect transition into Kendall. If we want to get maybe like more serious potentially about Kendall, we've talked about him a little bit, but I mean, vibe shift, complete and utter vibe shift. This is like, Kendall, this is the roller coaster of Kendall Roy. I mean, he is right back in the game. Part of why I almost chose him and Frank scene alone in the library as my favorite is I love how Frank even asks him, and he's like, hey man, like you've been doing great, like you got a lot of things cooking, like do you really want to get back in, like do you really want to do this? And I just felt like that was a rare moment on this show of someone being like genuinely looking out for someone and maybe potentially putting like their personal life ahead of the business and advancing in some career level. And I thought that was really nice, because Kendall, I mean, we've watched it when he gets into this
mode and he gets potentially into this role, which he will be because I guess the board voted him, it's just what the hell is going to happen?
Yeah, I think it just highlights how he's an addict, right? It doesn't have to be drugs or alcohol. This whole pursuit of succession is maybe the worst and most strong drug for him. There's a switch that flips. You see it and he's like a totally different person. And you already see him kind of like questioning it when he's alone. Like, why am I doing this? Yeah. He's just, you know, it's almost like the Darth Vader type vibe of him taking over.
I love it. Personally, I love it. I mean, at some level, he's a fictional character, so it is what it is. I love the potential that this creates and this version of Kendall creates.
I mean, I'm the one who bought the Kendall stock, right? So yeah. For me, this almost feels bad because when Kendall gets like this, nothing works out for him.
Yeah.
It'll get like taken from him at some point. But is there a world that Kendall screws up the Gojo deal and is like, CEO, I'm like loving this. Why would I give it to Mattson? I'm finally the CEO. Let's fucking rock.
I don't think the board will go for that though, right? Like, that's the thing. He could try and say, I'll stay in charge, but there's what, 20 other people or something who are going to vote. I think though, on the karaoke episode, you saw him light up, that evil Kendall started to creep in, or the KLR as everyone's calling him online, when Mattson kind of came at him. And I think when that challenge comes, he rises to the occasion, so to speak. So who knows?
And Stewie does ask him. Stewie does say, I mean, before, I guess Stewie kind of guarantees that he'll vote for him and have his back, of he asked his opinion on the deal. And Kendall says, I mean, the deal's a good deal. It has to go through, which is somewhat interesting because the last time that he was talking about it is, like you said, when Mattson challenges him, he gets the numbers from Stewie and he agrees that it's a bad deal. So I could easily see him just flip-flopping immediately almost and being like, nah, we can't do this.
I'm excited to have Alexander Skarsgård back. I think he's going to be a little firecracker.
Also thinking, I mean, now that they've said that they're going to buy Pierce, do they maybe have to then do the sale to have the money to buy Pierce?
I actually think you're right, because then he was like, they kept saying all episode, like, we've got stuff in motion. And they when they were insuring Shiv, like, you're in the loop, we promise. I believe them. Like, that was I was really believing them, especially Roman being like fully, because I think Roman and Shiv have more of, the twin vibes of them.
Wild.
I know. It feels realer than like anything with Kendall. It almost feels like with Kendall, you never know anything. But with Shiv and Roman, when Rome was like, well, Shiv, it doesn't work, like three's an orgy or something, well, hippie orgy. Shiv looks at him like, bro, you're my guy. What the fuck? Like, as much as they just taunt each other all day, those two are so close, and you know, so close as
as close as they can be.
I'm just gonna reiterate what Logan once said to Shiv, which is everything is always moving everywhere all the time. So I think you can mean something in a moment, but to me, if it's not on paper and signed, it doesn't mean it's lasting. And I'm not saying they're malicious. I'm just saying new things get thrown at you. We don't know what will happen.
Yeah.
I'm a skeptic.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we'll see, obviously, how Kendall telling Hugo to push the bad stuff. I mean, that's the first test of this, you know, new triad of how they're going to feel about it. I mean, Roman, at some level, I feel like it's an emotional thing for him to be like, hey, like, we shouldn't bad talk dad. But I think there's also another side to it, of that at some level, it's maybe smart to get it out there that Logan's health was failing, potentially was making bad decisions. Because like they say, from the market perspective, it's better to have the new, like the idea of a changing of guard be in the most positive light as possible. And those rumors will probably do that, even though it's somewhat fucked up to speak ill of your own dad the day after he's died.
Well, that's kind of Roman's thing, right? Like, he is still too scared to stand up to his dad. Even he's gone, he's not going to hear any of this stuff. He's not going to be mad at him. He's gone. And he still is like, his dad's got him by the balls. He really does. Kendall's reverting back to his old self, his worst self, his bad habits. He's going to do that. Shiv with the kid is like basically ignoring the fact that it's there at all and is not, you know, not getting ready, not gearing up to have a child, which is crazy. I think these kids, you know, even in the wake of his death, especially in the wake of his death, like his dad, the dad is still ever present. You know, it's never going to go away. Years of therapy, maybe, but they are still in the thick of it.
Yeah. Post-life. Last serious question is, do you think the fall is going to have a big impact? Shiv's fall, well, this is.
Like the baby?
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like in cinema, when someone who's pregnant falls, they end up going like, like as if your stomach actually hurts. And I mean, that's not science. I don't know anything about it. But I thought the same thing and was like, she seems like she got up pretty quick, but maybe not.
Yeah, maybe just there for us to be like, ooh.
That would be so weird to just introduce that bombshell and then write it out immediately. Yeah. Maybe they make you think, uh-oh, like, what's going to happen? This is a fragile thing, which is fair, but that would be weird if they wrote it out immediately.
I guess, like, to play it out further, exploring the idea of Shiv losing actually having to deal with the emotion of losing the child, maybe creating some type of realization for her, could be a potential storyline, but I don't know if A, they would do that, and B, if I would even like that. I think it's more interesting for her to actually have the child and see how that impacts her.
100%.
Yes.
I want to see that baby.
Yeah, for sure. I hope it's
a little redhead baby.
Yeah.
Two quick things. Marsha quickly selling that house for 63. Such a baller. She doesn't live there. She doesn't give a fuck. He says a number. She's like, perfect. Put it in my pocket. You know, Connor's just happy there's no realtor fees, whatever. Besides that, I am dying to know how much she gets. Because at first, during the first watch, like I said, I was very tired. I think I was like maybe writing something down on my phone and I missed what they were talking about specifically. And I thought she was just going to take 63 as her inheritance from Logan's death. And I was like, she was really quick to just take that number. I feel like she could get way more. 63. Connor gets that once a week for his campaign from Logan. I'm like, you know what I mean? So that, but Colin getting a watch, I was like, I hope he gets money too, but the watch is probably like that. That's probably the only fucking sentimental thing Logan did in his fucking will. A watch, probably his favorite watch, probably an antique from 1492. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Are we taking this as like the full will is being kind of, we got all we're getting, or I'm interested.
We're going to get a full.
Because there's like, he probably has so many investments, properties, et cetera.
Yeah.
So I
feel like the piece of paper was like a small extension of musings, as Jerry said, of like things to add to the will almost.
Doodles, as she called them.
Which was great.
Yeah.
So I would see it that way. I think I saw right online that the watch is worth like $3 million.
There you go.
He can buy himself Colin's, more pairs of jeans, I guess.
He would never.
Colin's going to wear it every day. It's going to be his prized possession. He's not selling that thing.
That's true. No. I also liked, I read somewhere that people said like the fact that was written in, like typed in, not scribbled on, like kind of shows that the relationship between him and Colin was there. It wasn't like how maybe to us it felt a little random in an episode, one or two, when they have the conversation in the booth.
Mm-hmm.
Logan actually did, obviously, have a little bit of a spot for Colin, which is somewhat nice.
Colin's loyal. I mean, he was there trying to kick Carrie out from Marsha. Like, he's
a rider
in with the
even Carrie.
Makes you feel bad for Chuckles, you know.
Will, first of all, one last thing. Willow looking at Marsha being like, yeah, game recognized, game girl.
Yeah,
like,
amazing.
As if Marsha was like, Marsha, do you think she was being genuine or she was sassing Willow? And then Willow sassed her back.
Oh, probably sassing.
Oh, yeah, because we were like, okay.
There's always some bite to what Marsha's saying. I don't think she respects any of those kids and anyone really but herself, to be honest, and barely Logan. But my parting thoughts is Caroline is a legend. I just want to say that. I love her.
She's great.
Yeah.
She is solid. She stays solid. She stays ready. She's always
nothing bothers her. She's
phone in hand. Yeah, dude. She is ready to go at all times.
There's a man dead in front of her, her boss, and she doesn't give a fuck. It's time for the statement press.
Yeah, she's like, all right.
If you want someone all business, she's got nothing else. She's business. But it's interesting that she doesn't want to be in the mix because she's clearly like top management. She's like, Jerry.
Yeah.
She knows. I think she understands. And that's, I mean, hopefully we get some more Jess, because that's like, Jess is like the little immature, younger
what, unevolved version.
Yeah, she's now a CEO executive assistant, so good for her.
Ooh. Yeah, because we haven't seen her, and I like Jess, so.
I mean, she wasn't at the wedding. She was just on the, she's still trying to find that plane doctor.
Yeah, she is.
They never her back. There,
that she's is exactly what
Kendall
it is.
Fired her, probably.
She's too scared to tell Kendall that she couldn't find a plane doctor, and he hasn't.
She fled the country.
Yeah. I also, my little parting shot will be, I'm curious to see how much time passes until the next episode. Because they mentioned the election's about a week away. And Connor, like, are we going to see Connor and them go to these states and have a little bit of a campaign? I'm only thinking about it from a Connor perspective, obviously. Or is the next episode... I didn't watch the preview, so I guess I might sound stupid in saying this, but like...
Do you want us to answer?
Do I? Yes, I do. Because I just would like to know.
It looks like they're going to Sweden for that retreat. Matson's in it, and I think all... I don't know if I saw Connor like the next day, in the preview. And maybe they'll cut between both. Who's to say? But sounds like that is next. Then I imagine, are we going to get a funeral for Logan? Are we going to get anything like that? True. I don't know. And then the election at some point.
There's also a bit of Roman looking to Connor being like, they were wondering if you would, this was in this season on, and it was like, they're wondering if you would drop out of the race. And then Connor's like, me? And then they both start laughing, and then it cuts to a new scene. So there's definitely going to be a Roman Connor scene pre-election, because they want the 1%. The 1%, if Connor's not in it, they're going to want to have to vote for someone else or not vote at all. But, you know, that's how you get squeezed.
Con heads are loyal. Us con heads are loyal. We're going to write him in.
Us con heads.
Right in.
Like. Yeah, we're totally going to write him in to still get in that 1%. I'm just, that a general idea of what the timeline of the season looks like. Because pregnancy is a big thing that puts somewhat of an idea into our heads of, like, if we see the baby, obviously there's going to be somewhat of a time jump. Elections within a week. We need a funeral, which is maybe a couple of days away. I don't know.
So. Yeah. I thought Brian Cox said in that, like, companion podcast that. And I didn't know if he just meant the part of the season he was in, but something about every episode being a day. I was confused if that would be the full season. If it was, that's a very interesting approach and will leave us with many questions, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it feels like that's not enough time. I mean, they almost gave us a little bit of a time frame, too, of what the interim CEO period would be like. Mm-hmm. And I feel like it wasn't terribly long, right? Didn't they say like 6 months at most?
Yeah, 6 to 8 is what they said.
Because I imagine it's the deal and then the whole merging and sorting things out.
Yeah.
So yeah, not long at all.
All right. Anything else we would like to say before we end this episode?
No, another good episode, though. It was not as, like, obviously coming off of last week, I was so insane. Yeah. So this was a nice little relaxing episode. It feels like a lot of just, zhuzhing, like I said. Lots of zhuzh. Yeah.
I will say that I, again, reading something online, it's hard to follow up zhuzh, but I'll try, that it was an interesting comment of how obviously Logan's not in the show anymore, but he still was like the main character of the episode, which is just interesting to see how long, I mean, there's only however many episodes left, but how long that will continue, or if we get somewhat of a subtle transition away from Logan and it's like really sibling focused, I guess we will see. But him not being there obviously let so many other characters shine. I mean, Carl got a lot of screen time and lines in this, and he always packs a little bit of a punch in those, which is nice. Frank, like we said earlier, I thought had a fantastic episode. So it's just Marsha, I feel like, got the most screen time she's had in a while. So just seeing all these other people being able to fill that void is just nice for the show going forward. All right.
I'm good.
All right. No more zhuzh. So that wraps up season 4, episode 4, Honeymoon States.
What?
So we'll obviously be back next week with coverage of episode 5, whatever they end up titling it. And I will be doing our executive summary, so obviously tune in for that. As always, we love you guys. We thank you for listening. If you have not yet and you would like to, just another reminder to subscribe. And again, check out the website, bingetowntv.com. for everything Bingetown, all in one place. Once again, as always, we are Bingetown TV, and thank you for listening.
Fuck off.
And fuck off.
Adjourn.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.